Hi there, everybody, and welcome to yet another Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, and joining me, as always, is my co-pilot, Kyle Krause. Hi, Kyle.
Hello, Ian. Hello, listener folk.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. You sound pretty tired yourself, sir. How are you doing?
Well, you may not have picked up on it, but I am tired. I am very tired. This episode is late.
Oh.
For which I apologize, because I thought, I scheduled this perfectly, which is to say not at all, and it's going to happen right in the middle of the Thanksgiving trip. But that's okay. I'll just record the show during an off hour while I'm in the States. It took me 3 days to get the computer to connect to the Wi-Fi. You know what was wrong with it?
What's that?
I hadn't updated my Wi-Fi.
The driver?
The drivers, after I rebooted the machine. I'm sitting there going, why is this not working? It's because you're like 5 years behind, stupid. So.
Is it bad I was going to suggest that? But then I thought, well, no, it works at his own house, so.
Yeah,
so. Why would he need to do that?
And we couldn't really maintain a solid connection, and I didn't want to run the risk of driving up the data on roaming, so.
Yeah.
Here we are, a few days late. But we're going to do our best to get this up and out this week and, you know, do some pre-recording on some other shows so that you've got plenty of Bumblecast to take you through December. And then we'll be into 2016.
2016.
For those who don't know, I'm U.S. born, but moved to Canada to be with my wife, which comes with the wonderful bonus of having two Thanksgivings a year. We've already discussed this
right on
the Bumblecast, if you haven't already heard. So for Thanksgiving this year, you know, we had it up here first, and now it was time to have it down south. And I was like, well, you know, given with time and money at the moment, maybe we'll just have to skip this year. And then turns out my youngest brother got his Eagle badge, which is the highest honor that you can get in the Boy Scouts. He also got some other, like, higher levels to the Eagle Scout. I didn't even know there were higher levels. It's like Super Saiyan 3 for Eagle Scouts or something. And my grandmother passed away, which hit my mother pretty hard for obvious reasons. So,
right.
So, you know what? We have to be there this year. And then on top of that, all of my friends had babies over the summer. Babies galore. And they were all going to be in Charlotte because they couldn't travel with the new babies. So it's like, all right. We're going to go down there to see family and all the friends and all their new babies. One of them is 16 pounds, Kyle. Have you ever held 16 pounds on one arm for an extended period of time?
I used to work in a grocery store meat department, so I'm going to say yes, but it wasn't something I cared if I dropped or not.
Also guarantee it was probably just as messy, but in different ways.
Right.
So to make traveling and seeing all the people easier, we drove down. And truth be told, the drive from Toronto to Charlotte is not a bad drive. You just take the QEW down, cross the Peace Bridge into Buffalo, New York, get on the I-90 West, take I-77 down, and boom, you're there. To get back, you just go the opposite way. It's a really straightforward drive.
Mm-hmm.
It's rather pretty. You're never too far away from a cheeseburger. And it's really not bad. You even cut across most of the Appalachian Mountains. Whereas if you took I-79, you'd be weaving through the mountains for most of the trip, going up along the spine of West Virginia. That adds, like, an eternity to the whole thing. So, overall, it's not a bad trip. But it's also 2 days of driving. 4 days total for just the trip, and then a week of seeing family and friends and all that jazz. So, I done be plumb worn out, sir.
Yes, understandably.
I mean, you came up to visit not long ago yourself.
Right, back in August.
You saw the drive from Toronto to the airport in Buffalo.
In Buffalo, yeah.
That is the first leg of the trip.
Yeah.
Would you characterize that as a brief trip?
It was less brief than I thought, than I was led to believe. I apologize for putting you through that three times.
Well, first time was to pick you up, second time was to drop you off, and the third time was to drop you off for real because the flight didn't work out.
Yeah, traffic was not kind on that second trip.
Coming back into the country.
Yeah.
We get into a line to cross the bridge,
uh-huh.
To get into a line to get to customs. And as we approach, I think, oh, why is nobody else in this lane? I'll go over here. That wasn't a lane. That was some idiot trying to skip ahead in line. Nobody else saw this and got behind him, creating a false line.
Ooh.
I was led astray by the false line, Kyle. So we're in line, and we're in line, and the sun has set, and we're in line, and we're in line. Get honked at by some guy behind saying, "Oh, hey, buddy, why don't you just make the effort and get in there?" I had choice words for that gentleman, Kyle. And then he scoots ahead and manages to get in the line before I do, so I had even more choice words for him.
I'm assuming most of these cannot be repeated on this family-friendly show.
Well, we could, but then it would sound like an air raid siren after we, bleeped it all out. So, in honor of my semi-comatose state, today's episode is brought to you by the word travel.
It sucks.
I'm not a big fan of it myself. Do you travel much?
No. For precisely the reasons you have so eloquently already, I guess you didn't really explain them, but you provided examples.
I guess we've touched upon it. This may have already been a poor choice in topics. What's the furthest you've traveled in your life?
Probably over to you, I believe. Really? I believe that is the furthest I've been, yep. From Phoenix to Toronto. That's pretty far.
It's a decent job.
I've also done Southern California to Washington, D.C., which is probably a comparable distance.
I would imagine it's even further.
Is it?
Well, Southern California is all the way on the West Coast. So with Phoenix, you have a few miles at least.
Yeah, maybe. About 300-ish miles, yeah.
And Toronto is further west than D.C. is, so...
Yeah, but it's also further north.
It's also true.
So the north, it's probably about a comparable distance. I always say it's like 2,000 miles-ish to get from one side to the other.
I guess it would come down to the angles of the flight, but that requires math, and I can't even do that on a good day, let alone right now.
Plus, it added a lot to the trip to drive the last leg when we drove up there.
Of course, you had a funny flight where you had to land in Boston and then go back up to Buffalo, didn't you?
Right, yeah. It was kind of weird.
That's just silly.
Yeah, I flew to Boston, flew all the way to Boston, then had to come back down and over to Buffalo. I guess it's mostly just over now that I think about it, since Buffalo's upstate.
Sure beats driving all that way, though, I guarantee you that.
I actually prefer driving as a travel method, but not for, multi-day trips. But if I had to choose between driving and flying, I'd much rather drive. Flying these days is just stressful, but
it is, and I have apparently developed flight sickness.
Oh, really?
When I was first dating Aaliyah, the easiest way to get back and forth was to fly, and it's a 2-hour flight from Toronto to Charlotte. That sure beats the heck out of 14 hours on the road.
Yeah.
And, do that back and forth, not a big deal. It was stressful, sure, because you have to get there an hour before so you can clear security so that you can get to the plane so it can be late so you can get on and it cannot take off and then blah, 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 blah. But the more I've flown, the worse I've gotten, to the point now where if the plane takes off, I have to not look outside. I have to close my eyes and I have to focus on not being ill. It's weird. It's not pleasant, especially since flying is ultimately so convenient.
Yeah. I personally enjoy the act of actually flying.
Mm-hmm.
I do not like the process leading up to flying, and I don't necessarily enjoy being packed in basically a tin can with a bunch of other people. But the actual act of flying, I actually enjoy. Taking off is like my favorite part. I love sitting like right behind the wings and just watching the flaps work and everything back there. It's really interesting to me. And taking off, just the way it lays you back in the seat, it's pretty cool. I like that. But
it used to be thrilling. Now it's nauseating.
Well, yeah, if you do it a lot, I don't do it that frequently, so I guess I'm just not as used to it. But I know if you do it a lot, it's probably pretty tiresome.
That and, we won't get into that.
And if it makes you sick, yeah, you probably don't want to do that either.
Now, the furthest I've flown was when we were hosted at the Summer of Sonic in London, England, one year.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, 16-hour flight?
That's pretty far.
It was a long flight, and, truth be told, it wasn't altogether unpleasant, especially considering we were flying economy.
Uh-huh.
But it was a long flight, and that's a long time to sit in a chair and breathe the reprocessed air, and there's only so much movie you can watch before you realize that you're just looking at that tiny screen. And then I forget where we landed exactly, but we had to take trains into London itself, and the train I took, we ended up having to take separate airlines, which made things even more interesting. And neither of us had cell phones with roaming.
Oh.
And the train I took ended up becoming part of the London Underground, I believe, and trying to figure that out without much experience is kind of nerve-wracking. Thankfully, I have been to London one time before, so I wasn't completely a fish out of water, but I was getting a couple of looks from the locals going, "Who is that idiot Yank? I'm Canadian!" And I give up on even trying to figure out London streets. No, I'm sorry. No. I can find more meaning in an impressionist painting. Lovely crowd over there. Loved the show. That was great, aside from the lack of air conditioning, but absolutely wonderful people to talk to. Been to London twice. Flown out to San Diego, California a few times for San Diego Comic Con.
Yes,
first time we actually got to meet in person. That was a good time.
Yes, first and second times, I believe.
Great show. Wish I could do it more. Flown to New York because I'm not driving in New York. You cannot pay me money to drive in New York. You know...
Are you sure it's not driving and just extended parking?
A friend of mine put it very well in that it's not so much traffic as everyone is going where they're going and they just make it happen. It really is less about cars moving on a road, and it's almost organic the way these things of ceramic and steel are just weaving in and out. It honestly looks like blood vessels flowing through your veins. It's fascinating from an anthropological point of view, but as a spectator in the car seat, no. Don't like it one bit.
You're talking New York City proper, yes.
Oh, yeah. The only other part of New York I've seen in New York State is when we're driving up and we pass through the acres and acres of nothing, where there's this huge complex in Angola, New York, that bridges the highway that's got a McDonald's and a gift shop and, you know, a few eateries, massive bathrooms, and the signs leading up to it say, "This is your last stop for another 50, 80 miles." So it's like, all right, I'm not particularly hungry. I don't really have to pee. We're all right on gas. We're stopping anyway because I'm not getting stuck out here. Eaten by a chupacabra or something. Those New Yorker chupacabras.
My extent, the most I've driven has been going between Phoenix and Riverside Inland Empire area of California, Southern California.
How long of a trip is that?
And that's about 320-ish miles. It's about a five-hour drive, four-and-a-half, five-hour drive. It is a lot of nothing. There are, let me think, how many cities are there between Phoenix and Riverside? There's four. Four cities in 320 miles, and most
four.
Of them are...
Four cities on the road.
There's more. There are a couple more small ones, but the bigger ones I'm thinking of are and that's, like, about it.
Are we talking, like, cities, or, like, here's the building and the stoplight, we're calling it a city?
Some of them are almost like that, a little bit bigger. There's Quartzsite, which is a small-ish city. Actually, it's a pretty small city.
It sounds like a Pokemon.
Formerly Mining Town. Yeah, kind of.
Quartzsite? A Mining Town?
Quartzsite. Yeah, I know, go figure. Then there's Blythe, which is the quintessential border stop. Not really quintessential. You don't really have to stop there. I don't blame anyone who doesn't. It's also a fairly small city. It's not huge. There are no skyscrapers or anything. Then you have Indio, which is on the Indian reservation. It's decently large, but it's definitely on the lower end of the scale as far as living conditions and stuff.
That almost seems like it's a bad racial joke.
I don't want to say that.
Indian reservation? Indio.
Well, it's the city on the Indian reservation.
What they want to call it, that's cool.
That's what they named it, yeah. It's mostly casinos. Right. Casinos are sort of what keeps the city in business. And, yeah, that's it. I guess there's Banning. You go through Banning. Banning has nothing.
So you leave once you're banned?
Yeah, pretty much. And that's it. That's all it is. There's nothing. Otherwise, it's just pure empty open desert where there's a prison out in the middle of nowhere. You can see the lights from it at night. There's a couple of proving ground test tracks for automobile manufacturers out there, but you can't even go near those. So there's really nothing interesting out there. Maybe a decently scenic drive like the first time you do it, But after the 10th or 15th time, it sort of loses its luster.
I can imagine.
And there's not that much to see. That's about the extent of my traveling, other than the few times I've flown.
Now, the last place on my list is, got to go to Cancun one year. Mother-in-law's like, I got some extra plane tickets. You want to go to this all-expenses-paid resort? And it's like, yeah. Why? Well, wait. This is also when the fighting amongst the cartels got especially noteworthy, to the point where it was actually showing up in U.S. news. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the stuff where people's faces were sewn to soccer balls, that kind of level of, you know, we've reached comic book villainy levels of evil here.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is now the best time to go to Mexico? And they're like, you realize it's on the opposite coast of where that's all happening, right? And it's like, no, but okay, that makes me feel better.
Yeah, it's not all of Mexico.
No, it's large swaths of it. But right. It's a personal thing. I really don't like being waited upon. You know, going to a restaurant is one thing. That's their job. That's fine, you know? But going to a big resort where just even staying at a hotel makes me a little antsy because I feel bad that somebody has to wash the towels that have been on my nasty body, changing up the sheets, picking up after me. It's like, I try to clean up after myself.
Mm-hmm.
So going to a resort where you're waited on hand and foot at all hours of the day, where you just say, bring me more chicken wings, and they do it, it drives me up the wall. On the other hand, it's really, really nice not having to cook for yourself or clean up after yourself. You want breakfast in the morning? Yes, you'll just take it on the terrace. How lovely. And now you just leave it there and someone else will clean it up for you. It took me a few days to finally relax and say, this is what they're here to do. They're probably paid well because, you know, it's all these American and European tourists coming in.
Yeah.
You're not making a mess. You're not, you know, destroying your hotel room. Just relax. You're the good kind of guest. They don't mind you. Just don't get in the way. Don't be overly demanding. Order yet another virgin pina colada because those got tasty.
I have never been. I've never been to a resort like that before.
I would say if you have the chance to put some money aside, do it just the one time for the decadence to be able to experience it and say, "Yeah, that was neat." Obviously, a lot of other things take priority, but if you have the option, I'd say go for it. Like, I've never been on a cruise.
I haven't done that either.
The closest we ever did was we went to Newfoundland to go whale watching once. And that's when I discovered I get seasick.
Oh, cool.
So one of the things I did not realize, because I've never been on a boat like this, is you don't go inside if you're seasick. I thought, go into the cabin and sit down. Mm. And that would, you know, offer you stability.
Nope.
No. Nope. It gives you a better frame of reference of just how much you're tossing and turning like you're inside a washing machine.
Mm-hmm.
So I very quickly learned to leave that area and clinging to the rail, watching the puffins fly around. And I think we saw a little bit of a tail. Everything was gray and choppy. It could have been a tail. It could have been another bit of water. Who knows? By the time we were back, I was not really interested in that, you know, fine East Coast lobster. I just wanted to lie down and die.
Understandable.
Newfoundland's really neat, though, because it's got that kind of European, London-y perpetual gloom and fog because they're right on the water.
Yeah.
And pretty far north. But all of the houses are like crazy Crayola bright colors.
Oh, yeah?
Like, no two houses are the same color and they're not next to each other. So you just look out across the kind of gray rocks and the kind of gray-green greenery. And there's like this bright blue house, bright yellow house, bright magenta house. It's like somehow Splatoon happened out on the coastline. And it's neat. It's different.
That's kind of cool. I would like to go see that. I have a friend. I have a friend from Newfoundland, so
okay,
I might be able to
swing that trip.
Maybe someday when I go on my cross continental trip.
No, sir. If you're doing this, you're calling it the cross country trip.
Oh, I see that. I see what you did there.
I may be falling over tired, but I still got it.
You still got it.
You can
still pull it off. I see that. I cannot rise to your cleverness levels.
You're just being patronizing.
I just can't. I'm not being patronizing, I'm being honest. I should mention one last place I have been. There's two more places I have been, both driving. Been down to Mexico, Rocky Point, Puerto Penasco.
Oh.
It's a fairly nice area that I went to, but definitely a tourist town. I got sick for 2 weeks after going there.
Did you drink the water, Kyle?
Not directly, but I went to a restaurant where I had a soda. That might have done it. A soda from the fountain might have been a bad idea. And also drove to Texas. I'm trying to remember the exact area. I know we were in Dallas for a bit. I cannot remember the exact area's name. I don't recommend that. driving from Phoenix to Texas. It's not very interesting.
Well, I was going to say, isn't not Dallas very kind of in the heart of the state?
Yeah, it took a while. It took a long, long time to get
just there. Driving halfway across Texas, I think, is grounds for euthanasia. Add in the rest of the West.
Add in right. Half of Arizona, all of New Mexico.
Nope.
Yeah, it was a little rough.
I think I'd fly.
I wasn't driving, luckily, but it was still pretty rough.
You know what I'm looking forward to, all this talk of travel? Those beautiful, beautiful self-driving cars that they've got in testing right now.
My body is ready.
Just imagine, you know, you plug in where you're going to go, you get on the highway, and then you're free. Take a nap, do some work. Now that they've got, you know, data roaming in cars starting up, go online. You can perform a whole WoW raid as you cross Texas.
Record a podcast.
That's what we're doing, Kyle, in the near future when they've got these magic robot cars that drive better than people do.
We're just driving around recording podcasts. I like it.
Bumble Cross Country Cast. No, we can't call it that. I don't want that many K's in a row.
Oh, no.
Not that kind of podcast.
Oh, no.
We'll get something slightly less insulting and just call it the Bumble Pod Racing.
Ah, I like it. Although some people might still find that pretty insulting.
I know, it's the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, whatever. That's like the one scene from the first movie that I actually think is okay.
Nah, give me the Jedi
anyway,
fights.
Anyway, Star Wars is next week. Anyway, next episode.
All right, speaking of driving, I think we've sufficiently driven this topic into the ground. Why don't we move on to some Q&A?
All right, the Q&A segment is a segment where we talk to Ian, mostly about his comic shenanigans.
Shenanigans?
Are they shenanigans? They're not shenanigans. What am I saying?
They're pretty shenanigan-y.
That's the wrong word.
Oh, well. Is shenanigan-y even a word?
Shenanigan-y is a word now, since you said it.
All right, I bumble coined it.
I like that. Is that what we're going to call words we make up? Bumble coining?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. I like it. We have coined bumble coining. It has been bumble coined. First question is from Next Walt Disney. That's rather presumptuous.
No, it's going to be trouble when the old one gets thawed out, but whatever.
Yeah, true. This one says, will Sonic, Shadow, and Silver ever go on an adventure together? Maybe in a future Sonic Universe arc?
This kind of question dances on the line of what I don't want people to ask. Because if I do a, you know, triple hedgehog story, someone's going to say, oh, Ian used my idea to put them all together. And might get huffy over it. At the same time, they're the three leading hedgehog characters. Sorry, Amy. It wouldn't make enough sense for them to be together in one adventure. So I'm going to say maybe with a shrug. I don't have anything definitely planned, but it would be kind of fun to see how their dynamics play off each other. Mostly I just want to say be careful, folks, when you're wording these questions, because I really, really, really want to avoid any plausible allegations of intellectual theft, because 99% of the people out there would be totally cool with it. Some of them would even feel honored that their idea got featured in the book some way. But that 1% would cause very big problems, and I really don't want to lose my career over a misunderstanding. So
right.
Let's just be mindful of that, shall we, folks? Yes.
Line by Line asks, since Ian was bragging in episode 2 about double dipping on Thanksgiving, here's a Thanksgiving question. We're a little late on this, but that's okay.
Yeah, it is the season.
Yes. Stuffing, cooked in the bird, or dressing, cooked in its own pan. Why or why not?
Ooh. Kyle, you can chime in on this one, too, because,
right.
You know, Thanksgiving
is a fairly generic question.
I'm honestly kind of new to stuffing. Usually I was looking at this weird conglomeration of bread and vegetables going, no, not really, thanks. But then the previous Thanksgiving, my mother-in-law made some, and she kept asking how it was, and it's like, well, I better eat it now. And it was amazing. So now I'm quite happy with it, and to the point where I'm not entirely proud to admit to this, but as part of the leftovers, I took a hamburger bun and stuffed it full of turkey and stuffing and just had a stuffing burger. And that was, oh, the carbs. Such tasty carbs. But I don't have a protein preference.
In there, too. So.
I don't have a preference because I haven't experienced enough, but I'm pretty sure most of what I've had has been in bird. So, I don't know. I guess to each their own. What do you think?
I'm going to say in the bird. I'm a big fan of stuffing. I have been a big fan of stuffing ever since I was a kid, probably because I'm just a big fan of bread in general. So, more bread products, the better. But stuffing cooked in the bird is really good. I do not mind it cooked on its own. I also don't horribly mind instant stuffing, even though it is a, you know, not that great, but I can deal with it. So I don't know where this why or why not part of the question was here, but I guess if you didn't like it, I guess why or why not, why don't you like it,
or why would you do why that would you to the do insides that? Of a bird, why would you not put it in the bird? I don't know,
why would you jam it full of bread? Why would you jam the bird full of bread?
Well, you do that at the park anyway, so
I don't know, because it's delicious. Why is the reason for anything?
Now we're getting philosophical.
Especially, as far as food. Anyway, up next, this is a very timely question, actually, because your Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles debut hits the stands this month.
Yes, it does.
Hits the comic shops. So Sonic Blue Ranger asks, of all the different incarnations of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which are your personal favorites?
Ooh. I'm going to say it's a toss-up between the first live-action movie and the current cartoon series. And honorable mention of the, I think it was 2012? When was that? No. When was that other CG movie where they had Patrick Stewart?
Like 2007?
Yeah, something like that.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Where Patrick Stewart had a completely pointless cameo and really wasn't necessary. Honestly, I kind of wish they recut that movie, cut out the subplot they added, and just keep it to the Turtles, because all the cut content was delightful. But the original live-action movie actually holds up really well. I mean, yes. I will admit I'm looking at it through nostalgia goggles, but when you take the shortcomings aside and take into account what time period it was, and the fact that this is one of the first comic book movies to be made, it's amazingly good. It strikes just the right balance of tongue-in-cheek and taking itself seriously without taking itself too seriously. It's just a really good film. It doesn't pad things out. It doesn't make itself take too long. It just gets through the story, gets it done. And considering the animatronics and the foam rubber suits of the time, the acrobatics and the martial arts on display are really neat.
There's another interesting fact about that movie. Also, it was an independent film.
That's right, yeah, that's right.
It wasn't a Hollywood film. So, and it was like one of the highest grossing independent films at the time, if not the highest. So, and yes,
Ninja Turtles have always been kind of an indie program, so that's especially cool.
Yeah, and I watched it recently, and it really does hold up pretty well. So,
speaking of Thanksgiving, to tie it all together, my brother and I will reenact the Casey Jones Raphael scene word for word because we had it memorized. We watched that movie like twice a day for years.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody understands cricket. Gotta understand what a crumpet is to understand cricket.
I'd say you've pretty much hit the nail on the head, to be honest. To just agree with you. I mean, you think I'd say something different, but no, you're right on the mark as far as the best ones. I'm newly interested in the 2012 TMNT cartoon, and it's pretty fantastic. So I really enjoyed that. The first movie is excellent. I also like the second movie. It cranked up the cheese a lot, but I do like the second movie.
Oh, it smelled of Gouda.
Yes. It's not nearly as bad as the third movie, but still, it's pretty rough cheese-wise.
The second one is bad for the cheese factor because it does everything wrong that the first film did right, but the third movie is so forgettable it's almost more insulting.
Yeah, I like the second movie. I'll go there. It's cheesy, but it's fun, and it's got Super Shredder in it for 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a pointless appearance by Super Shredder.
I remember getting the action figure when I was a kid and being sorely disappointed that he was like a head shorter than the turtles.
What?
Yeah, like they had the movie style turtles that were all rubbery and textured like the actual turtles would be, presumably. Yeah. And they were really cool. Like, they had all the little spots on them and everything. But Super Shredder was, like, noticeably shorter than all of them and was in this perpetual stance of, I guess he's supposed to be holding some kind of lance and lunging forward. But he always was in this goofy kind of half-crouched pose.
Huh. That sounds kind of like the pose he does in the Turtles in Time arcade game, or Super Nintendo game, whichever you want to call it.
Maybe. Hadn't thought of that.
So, I don't know. Would it be... Maybe it was a toy for that game. It'd be kind of weird. You actually do fight him in that game, so that's kind of cool, but that's like the only appearance of him at the time. Now, at that
this, of course, isn't to speak ill of any of the other incarnations. I mean, the 80s one has oodles of goofy nostalgia factor.
Well, of course.
The 2003 series did a fun job of, I guess, making it a full-fledged action cartoon, and I never got a chance to sit down and read all the comic incarnations, you know, the Mirage, the original, the Archie version, all those. So I can't really say any one is better than the other, but, you know, of my exposure to the franchise, the most recent ones, I guess, are my favorites.
They all have their merits, I'd say. The originals being sort of a violent pastiche on superhero comics at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And just the really interesting stuff that they kind of did with that. But yeah, definitely the more recent ones are some of the better ones in my eyes. All right, next question. This question. You told me before we started this show, Ian, that you got some interesting questions.
I do.
You get some very interesting questions. And I'm like, well, I'm fairly familiar with the Sonic fandom, Sonic community. Know. I know what goes on in the seedy underbelly of this community sometimes. This question isn't that bad, but the fact that it exists, I don't know. Anyway. Lord Laharl's Vassal asks, can Madonna have a tiny crush on Sonic even though she is human? Now, let's preface this. I want to preface this because some people might not know who Madonna is. Madonna has recently shown up in the comics in an issue, or not an issue. Well, it was an issue of the, what was it, the magazine? Sonic
Supersonic Digest.
Supersonic Digest? Okay.
I'm pretty sure. It's been a while.
One of those. One of the magazines that unfortunately I don't get the chance to pick up, usually. But originally she was a concept character for Sonic 1, and she was Sonic's love interest. So, Ian, proceed.
Imagine Jessica Rabbit from Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but a blonde.
Yes, and as a human, instead of as a weird rabbit human.
Before we answer that question, let me bring up a idea here. Because amongst the unused ideas that recently came to light, one of the things that came up was when you beat Sonic 1, one of the original ideas was, as Eggman's fortress blows up, Sonic jumps out, grabs onto the talons of an eagle, and gets flown to safety. This is including the female love interest. Fast forward to Sonic 2006, where Sonic is paired up with a female human love interest, and one of the key features in the jungle area and in Kingdom Valley is grabbing onto the talons of an eagle and being flown around. Is this coincidence?
Is this reused ideas? Yes.
I don't know.
I'm going to say most likely.
In answer to the question, which you got me all hyped up. I thought it was going to be worse than that.
I know.
This more or less falls under my general Blake Kidd statement of, I don't really want to get into the shipping wars ever again. I'm burned out on that nonsense. But when you add on the bonus, shall we say, of implied bestiality, I really, really, really don't want to go there. I realize that this is a cartoon series. You know, calling Sonic an animal is about the same as calling Mickey Mouse an animal. They're kind of a different beast, so to speak. But it still brings up questions I don't want to ask. Questions I don't want to find the answers to. Questions that I really don't want raised at all. So instead of going there, I prefer to not.
Let's not then.
Now, maybe to get the same effect, she's a great admirer of his heroism.
Right.
If you want to construe that as something more, knock yourself out. Literature is one half the reader's interpretation. And that's a bigger debate for another day. But, it's debatable to even call Sonic literature at this point. But, you know.
What is Madonna's actual... what is she in the comics now? What is her position?
Madonna is, in the comics, she's named Madonna Garnet, which is a nod to Agent Topaz from the Sonic X show.
Mm-hmm.
And she is part of CLIP, which is the counterintelligence unit within GUN. So she is a super special awesome agent.
Cool.
And she's part of grander plans I have that I want to explore GUN as a unit, as a organization a bit more. But there's a lot of stories to tell first.
Alrighty. Well, that's all I had on that one. Kind of an interesting question. Not that bad. Not as bad as you thought it would be. I haven't gotten any that are really outrageously bad.
I think at this point, I mean, I've been part of the community for 10 years now.
Right.
At least in a professional capacity. I've been part of it for even longer. But
yeah.
I think folks have kind of calmed down. And I think those who would be asking the more difficult questions, shall we say, have already learned that I probably wouldn't be answering them. So we've reached something of a stability.
Yeah, I'd have to agree there. So, yeah, keep the questions rolling in, guys.
That the show is young. You never know.
Yeah, we never know. I have a lot of questions, though. We've gotten quite a few. We can go on for quite a while on this.
Well, that was number 4. What's number 5?
We got one from the KKM. This is a silly question. He asks, would you rather press X to Jason or to Sean?
Who?
Okay. I'm guessing you have not played, I think it's Heavy Rain.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I get you. I'm going to go with Sean.
Sean? Because
somehow that sounds more like a bleeding noise. To me, that's more entertaining.
What about
Jason has too many syllables. It sounds like a name. It sounds something desperate. Sean, if you play it on loop enough, if you hammer the button enough, it just becomes noise. Sean. This is not to insult anyone named Sean, mind you, but
you can also press a button to yell Mario.
Did you ever play the Assassin's Creed series?
Very little.
In the second game, when you take over as Ezio Auditore in Italy. At one point, he is beset upon by villains, but rescued by his uncle, who he hasn't seen in forever. And as the fighting stops and the guy gets off his horse, Ezio says, "Who are you?" He goes, "Ezio, don't you recognize me? It's me, Mario." And they hold for the laugh.
I did hear about that.
Like, there is a distinct pause. And they never go back to it. They never drive it into the ground. That's all they do. And it's, it was perfect.
Nice. Well, personally, what I'd rather do, I'd rather hold X to pay respects.
There is.
Look what I've done.
There is. There is that. There is that.
Jeez. That's going to do it for this edition of the Bumblecast, I believe. unless we have anything else we want to add into this. Anything after that.
Well, I guess we might as well do the end of show plugs. Kyle, you take it off this time.
I am Kyle JCRB Krause. You can find my stuff over at kngi.org, where you can also find the archived versions of this show. If you are looking for my stuff, Game Fuel, Nitro Game Injection. Nitro Game Injection just recently came back, the show that I'm hosting with Larry Ogie. So if you're interested in video game music and video game music remixes, please go check those shows out. Definitely appreciate you guys taking a listen. Play a lot of Sonic and Sega music if that tantalizes you. If that gets you hyped. I know all you Sega fans are out there. You gotta be somewhere, maybe. Unless you all just like Sonic and that's it. Come on. Sega's done a lot of other cool stuff too, so come on, get on that. Gotta get on your Daytonas and Afterburners and all that. Anyway, Ian, go ahead.
You can always find my body of work and the latest news from me at bumbleking.com. That's bumble like the bee, king like the monarch. You can also check us both out on Twitter. My handle is at IanFlynnBKC.
And I am at KyleJCRB.
And you can always ask us questions on Twitter with the hashtag BumbleCast. If you ask questions otherwise, I will probably ignore them because we need content for the show. Once again, thank you all for your patience as I drove up and down the East Coast to enjoy turkey and family and babies. And we'll be getting the next BumbleCast. You like that? This Kyle like the way I said babies.
You almost implied you were eating babies. That's why I started laughing. I'm sorry, I'm a horrible person.
We're ending the show before I incriminate myself further.
You did not actually say it, so you're good.
We will see you on December 14th for Bumblecast number 6. I am your host, Ian Flynn. This is the baby, Kyle Krauss. And we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Bumblecast. Please subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review on iTunes. Find more episodes at bumbleking.com and kngi.org. Bumblecast is copyright Bumble King Comics. Original music composed by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more music from Coda at bc.s3m.us. Pay what you want for the intro theme, as part of the compilation album Noise Chan and Nugget, Adventures in Chiptune, at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com.